This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 16 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today. And with me on the show today is blogger, runner, and wine and diner, Michelle Scribner-McLean. How you doing, Michelle?
I'm fine. I wined and I dined. I really had a great time at Food and Wine. Got to go around a few times. How are you, Mike?
Okay, and looking forward to see what January brings. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I hope you'll be out there running. I do have a shout-out today, okay. And it's from somebody from our Facebook page. His name is Erica Elia. And the reason I wanted to give her a shout-out is because she told us that she had a PR while running a race and listening to our podcast. So I was very touched and honored by that. So yay to Erica. Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations, Erica. That's the closest I've been to a PR in a long time.
You'll have your time again.
Yeah, I hope so. We've been getting a lot of questions. So this is a big question show, and we're going to see how many we get through today. And Steve is not here today. So it will be Michelle and myself who will be looking at these questions and hoping to answer them to the best of our ability. And we start off with Jackie Fantish Cowan, who says, "Hi, I haven't caught up on all the episodes yet, but was wondering if you also weight train as well as run." Michelle, I'm going to turn this to you because you are doing a much better job of this than I am.
Yes, well, I do, Jackie, I do weight train, and there's a reason for this, which is this year I decided to do the marathon. And in the past, I've done a great job with keeping up with my running schedule, but I haven't done any cross training, and I didn't do any strength training. And I thought it probably accounted for some of the injuries that I was getting, and I was getting a lot. Mike can attest to that. So this year I started to go to the YMCA, and where they have personal trainers, and I've been working with my trainer, Seth, for, about 6 months now. He's fantastic, and we're hoping to have him on a show later on. I've already mentioned this to him. And I work with him for 30 minutes twice a week, and he is a runner, and he knows about running, and his wife's a runner, and he works with all sorts of, he helps me do all sorts of different things. I have issues with my IT band, and I have issues with my Achilles, and he's working with me to kind of strengthen those things, and I have noticed a big difference. I've been able to run, when I did my 20-mile run a few weeks ago, I just felt a lot of strength. I felt it all just kind of worked out in a way that it hadn't before. And I'm just noticing on my endurance is increasing, and I really attribute it to him. So I know personal trainers cost a lot of money. You don't have to use a personal trainer, but there are all sorts of strength training programs that you can find on the web. I would recommend, if you can, try to go to somebody a few times because if you have issues, they can really help you. I know, like, I'm weak on one side, and he helps me with weights to work on that one side. Or, go once a month. You don't have to go as much as I've been going. But I think the benefit is it really helps you to make sure that you run safely. And the thing for me is I want to continue running for the rest of my life. So for me, it's a kind of an insurance policy to make sure I'm being safe.
Weight training strengthens muscles, and the stronger your muscles are, the longer you will ward off fatigue in a long distance race. So it really goes a long way. And just to repeat what Michelle said, any kind of serious weight training requires a professional guidance along the way. So it's very important that you talk to a trainer or someone who understands what your needs are and can put you on that path. Okay, so our next question, Michelle, comes from Laura Pellizzetti, and she says, "Hi, I love your show. It's been so helpful to me already. I'm a new runner, thinking about signing up for the Princess Half 2013. Two questions. Can you talk a little about training on a treadmill? I live in New England, and I'm worried particularly about getting in my long runs during the winter. I'm using the Galloway training schedule. Also, what do you think are the best hotels to stay at during a race weekend? Many thanks, and keep up the great work. Michelle, I'm going to start off with this saying, Laura's a new runner, and she's thinking about signing up for the Princess Half 2013. I don't know what the current registration percentages for that, but that's not my concern. My concern is, Laura, that you're a new runner and you're thinking about running a half marathon in about 4 months. That's pretty aggressive. I hope that you have already established a base. If you've established a base of several times a week running and you're close to the maybe 10K distance, which is 6.2 miles, you're on your way. I just hope you're doing okay, and you do have a base. Training on a treadmill. I think we talked about this before on one of our previous shows, and one of the issues that some people have is they just don't feel like they're running normally and on a treadmill, that when they run on a treadmill, they're running differently. They may be straight up. They may not be getting the type of propulsion that they would normally exert when they are running on the roads. There's no resistance. There's a difference in their gait. And what happens is that sometimes if you run on a treadmill and you train on a treadmill and then you end up running in a race, it's different. Your muscles are saying, hey, this is a little bit different. So I don't know I particularly don't like training on a treadmill. I don't mind walking on a treadmill, but I don't like training on a treadmill. Michelle?
Well, Mike, the Princess as of today is 88% full, and I think she actually has plenty of time to get ready for it. Yeah, I think that she should definitely start as soon as possible. We did talk about the treadmill thing. I hate the cold. I'm a lifelong New Englander myself, and I really don't like the cold. At where I run in the winter, if I'm not running outside, there's a track that's 7 laps per mile, and it gets very monotonous, but I prefer that over the treadmill, typically. However, and we said this on a previous episode too, the treadmills where I run at the Y have a new feature, the newer ones have a feature, where you can actually do intervals. So I run with the Galloway method too, in a 4-1, so I run for 4 minutes and walk for 1 minute, and I can set the treadmill to do that. So for me, it's a combination of running on that indoor track so that I'm actually moving around, and it makes it a little less monotonous for me. And then sometimes I do the treadmill for my shorter runs. But the next question she had, Mike, is about hotels, and I bet you are the expert on which hotels to stay in during race weekend.
Well, it depends upon what type of a race you're running. If you're running a nighttime race, I might think one way. If you're running a daytime race, I might think another way.
I think she's asking for the Princess, where she'd stay for that one.
For the Princess, the Princess Half Marathon course is exactly the same course that you will see at the Walt Disney World Marathon weekend. It starts in Epcot, ends in Epcot. And so the first suggestion would be look for an Epcot resort. The idea there is that the closer you are to the race start, the longer you can sleep the night before, and the closer you are to getting that nice hot shower that you want right after the race. The only thing is that when you stay at a Epcot resort, like if you stay at the Beach Club or the Yacht Club or Boardwalk, you can't walk through Epcot. You will be taking a bus. So either way, you'd be taking a bus. I think that those would be probably the favorite hotels. I mean, I've stayed in several when I've gone down there to run. One of my favorites is Pop Century in the 90s. And the reason for that is that it's very, very much out there on the edge of the resort, and you're not bothered by people. You can sleep early before the race, and it just seems to be pretty good to me. It's a little bit further than if you were staying at Boardwalk and the others, and so you'd have to get up earlier to go to the race. But pretty much any hotel, I would always check to see if you can in advance to see which of the hotels are host hotels, because those are the hotels where you would most likely get the bus. And I believe that as far as the Princess half marathon goes, I don't know. I don't believe things can always change, but I'm pretty sure that not every hotel is a host hotel. So that means you have to really check to see what you would need to do to make sure you get to the race start in the morning.
I agree with you, Mike. I don't think for that one that, you know, in January, you can get buses from pretty much every hotel. But some of the select races like the Wine and Dine and the Princess, there are host hotels. So you could be near a hotel that's a host hotel or get dropped off there. Or as I did, I wasn't staying on property for the Wine and Dine, be dropped off at Epcot for the race start. But I think it is good to stay on property. I know that for me, it really makes a difference to be able to be close and to be able to go back and take a shower after that race. So,
yeah. Okay. Our next question comes from Elizabeth Driscoll, who says, question, do you use a running app? Do you think the Galloway $15 half marathon training app is worth it? She says need the splits timing feature. So Michelle, you're probably more into this kind of a.
Yeah, Mike calls me gadget girl because I love my gadgets. So Elizabeth, this is a really tricky question. I guess I'd need a little bit more information. I do actually have the $15 half marathon training app, and I don't use it. I use it once or twice, and I don't use it for a few different reasons. Number one, I don't really like running with my phone. I do sometimes run with my phone, but I don't like to use it to time my splits. In terms of functionality, it seemed to work fine, and I have no problem with the $15, but I really like my GPS watch. That's what I use mostly for my splits. There are all sorts of, I think we're going to probably do a whole show on this at some point. There are all sorts of apps that you can use. I have a zombie running app that I use. And there's a Hal Higdon app that a lot of people like, but I mostly use my GPS watch. I find that for me, that's more accurate and more dependable. And, it kind of logs all my runs in a way that I really like. Some people use the Nike app on their Nano or their iPhone. That it just happens to be a matter of preference. So what I would recommend, you know, even though I don't like to run with my phone, I do run often with my Jeff Galloway's run walk run Gym Boss, which a lot of people on the Run Disney courses have. You can get it at Amazon, and it costs about $19, $15, something like that. And what it is just a little kind of rectangular thing that you can time your run, walk, run for whatever you want it to be. As I said earlier, mine's a 4-1, it could be a 3-1, whatever you want it to be, 3-2, 1-1. And then it will beep and buzz, or it will just buzz, whatever you want it to do, to tell you when your next walk or your next run is. People use this constantly at Run Disney events. When I ran the Wine and Dine last week, I had to make sure that I had mine kind of close to my ear so I knew which one was, which if it was mine that was beeping, because there are so many going off. So that's a nice feature. But what it doesn't do, and what you want, Elizabeth, is to be able to time those splits. That just tells you when it's time to walk and when it's time to run. So for me, I use a GPS watch. And I think when Steve's around, because I know he sells these in his store, we'll go over those more carefully in terms of what features. So that's my very long question to your very long answer to your very short question. Mike, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, that it seems like it was last week, but it was actually 2 weeks ago that you ran the Wine and Dine. So, you know. No, I think you covered that really well, and you covered it maybe about 1,000% better than I would have covered that question. So good
job.
Well,
I think she brings up, there are all sorts of different apps, and I would encourage people to go on our Facebook page and kind of tell us which apps work for them, because there are, you know, so many different running apps. And I think it really comes down to a matter of preference. It's what you like and what you like to hold with you on your run, and how you like to use your technology and what information that you need. And the nice thing is that the technology is in a place where you can really kind of cater it to what works for you. Now, Mike will attest, I don't want to go on for too long, but Mike and I are running buddies, and when I first started running about 4 or 5 years ago, I didn't like to have any watch at all. I didn't want anything. I didn't want to carry anything. And he used a running watch, and then I kind of ramped it up to a GPS watch, and now he's using a GPS watch too. So, and I honestly now wouldn't think of running without it. I really like that information. I like to look at those data. So it depends on what your needs are, Elizabeth. So maybe you can give us a little bit more information about, you know, what features you want and how much money you want to spend and what you want to run with holding.
This makes for a very good transition, because speaking of gadgets, speaking of technology, speaking of watches, we have a question from Kirk Landry, who says, "Hi, Mike, Michelle, and Steve. Thanks for the great podcast. I have a running watch question. I have a $200 bonus coming from my employer for the holidays, and I was thinking about using it for a good running watch. I've heard Mike reference his Garmin several times. Would that be a good investment? If so, which model? What should I look for in a running watch? Thanks for the great podcast." So, Kirk, I think the first thing you need to do is think about what you are looking for in a watch as far as what it will provide for you, what kind of information. The number of watches out there, there are a number of models out there. We'll get to the models that Michelle and I use in a minute. One of the things that you need to think about is, okay, I want a watch that will do this for me. You may want to do some research on what the different models out there have offering for you, things like splits, virtual runners, all kinds of things, watches that have the ability to monitor your heart rate, a whole bunch of things. You can spend a lot of money on watches. And if you buy a watch that has more than what you need, maybe you're spending more money than you want. You want to make sure that you know what you want, look around, do some research, and see what works for you. Michelle, what model watch do you have, and what do you want to talk about regarding watches?
Sure. Well, I think you started off the conversation very well. I have a Garmin 310 XT, and I ended up getting this for two reasons. Number one is because my brother's an Ironman triathlete, and he recommended it, that this particular watch works well for triathlons. I don't have a plan to do a triathlon, but one of the reasons that the watch really works well for me is because I have very small wrists. And I actually had a conversation with somebody at the Wine and Dine about this too. Some of the other Garmin models are just too big for my wrists. They kind of turn around, and this particular watch, although it's a little bit more expensive, fits my wrist really well. Mike has a different one, but there are Garmin ones, there are Timex, there are Polar. Sometimes they come with heart rate monitors. Mine comes with a heart rate monitor, which is an add-on, but also comes with a foot pod that I can use when I run inside. I can calibrate it outside, and then when I run indoors on the track, it helps with that. So there are lots of different things. I think what you're looking at in terms of price is $150 on up, and they can go, you know, they can have, I think the Garmin ones, some of them cost $350. When we have Steve back on, we'll talk about some of the, you know, some of the other options. But I think I looked around a lot before I bought mine, and I think one other thing I want to recommend to you is that you don't just necessarily go to the running store and buy the watch there. I think if you do some searching, you can find a good price once you decide the features that you want. I went to a place called HeartRateMonitorsUSA.com, and they often have sales, and that's where I got mine. Amazon has them too. Although I like to really support my local running store, I wouldn't buy my technology there. Don't tell Steve. just because it just seems to cost a lot more money. Mike, what do you think?
A couple things. Number one, I use a 4Runner 305. And one more thing I want to mention that I want Kirk to keep in mind is that when you look for a watch, two things that I would write down that I think is very important. Number one, you want a watch that allows you to customize the display. You may want to see certain things on the display. You may not want to see everything. You may just want to see your overall time. You may want to see your pace. You may want to do a few other things. But having that flexibility, I think, is number one. Number two, the ability to take your watch and upload information to a site so that you can log your run and keep track of your running. Those are the two things.
Yeah, I wanted to mention two more things about this. Number one, what Mike said I think is really important. We both use Daily Mile, and with Garmin, it will sync to Daily Mile, which is sort of like Facebook for running friends. And the other thing, too, is I consider myself very tech savvy, but I still don't think I've really explored all the features of my running watch. For instance, I found out recently, after playing with it for a while, that I could do my my Galloway intervals with the Garmin watch. And, you know, Mike sometimes uses the virtual pacer, the virtual running partner. There are a lot of different features, and I don't think always, at least for the Garmin, that all the different features are intuitive in terms of how to find them. But I think if you give it a little bit of time, and especially if you have a running buddy or two who's familiar with them, you can really get a lot out of a running watch. But I would say definitely with that $200, you're going to be able to get a nice watch. The model that Mike has, what is again, Mike, your model?
It's a Garmin 4Runner 305.
Yeah, I think that's the one that I see most people have is Mike's watch. So I think that would be a good place to start.
Mitch Brannon has a very, very, very important question, and it looks like Mitch is planning a very big weekend in January. He says, I have a question for you. What are the best things to do on the Saturday after the half marathon before the full marathon? For example, recovery, park selection, nutrition. This is my first full and first goofy, so any help would be greatly appreciated. I love the show. Well, Mitch, since this is your first full and first goofy, this is going to be very important information for you. The thing that you want to do first is hopefully that when you're training right now, you're training to get your legs to understand what it's like to run when they are fatigued. Back-to-back long runs are important. Michelle and I trained for that last year, and I know that, boy, it really helped me to teach my body what I was going to ask it to do the second day of running.
Yeah, so Mike did you should just say, Mike, you did the half marathon, and then we did the marathon relay, and you did a really wonderful job preparing yourself by running those distances 2 days in a row. Much better than I did.
Well, I think you were sort of injured, too, so I'll give you some I don't want to say slack or excuse, but you know you were injured, so you had to be very, very careful. The important thing that I learned is that, Mitch, one of the things that you should be looking at is nutrition, recovery nutrition. It's so important because you have to think about what you're going to do for that second race. And if you're doing the goofy, and if it's your first full, my recommendation, and a lot of the goofy veterans will tell you this, goofy veterans, you want to hold back on Saturday. You want to make sure that you don't push it on Saturday because you need to maintain a certain comfortable pace that would allow you to go those 26 miles that next day. So you really need to, that's part of the recovery process of realizing what's ahead of you and being able to put forth the appropriate pace and do the recovery nutrition. Now, in order for you to do that, you need to take advantage of something that Disney offers. And I think Michelle knows what I'm referring to, and I'm going to turn it over to her to tell you what that's all about.
Oh, are you talking about Race Retreat, Mike?
Yes. Yes.
I should get a commission for talking about Race Retreat. Well, Race Retreat, of course, is you have to pay extra for it. Disney offers this extra feature where you can, before the race, have a place to kind of sit and relax and has a bag check and bathrooms. And then after the race, there is a full breakfast and a time for you to really relax, and you get massages there. And I know a lot of people who are doing the Goofy use Race Retreat after the half marathon to kind of get their recovery going for the next day. So it's a nice option.
If we had in one of these shows, we're going to tie down Len Tester and have Len come in and talk about touring during race weekends. But in terms of park selection and what you should be doing that Saturday, I think that it's important for you to think of this, Mitch. Number one, you don't want to go back to your room, take a shower, and go to sleep. What you want to do is you want to go back to your room, take a shower, get up, go out and walk around a bit. Not too much. Take it easy. Don't spend too much time on your feet. I would say stay close to the go to the park that offers you the least amount of walking and the greatest amount of attractions that allow you to sit down, relax, and offer you a chance to add more to the recovery. I would not do anything beyond 6 p.m. I would take it easy. I don't know how fast you run, but regardless of how fast you run, again, you want to hold back as much as you can on Saturday. Take it easy. Don't be on your feet that much. Make sure that you have everything in your favor for recovery, including compression sleeves on your legs, compression socks. You want that to help the circulation, and we Michelle and I both use that. We actually I remember sleeping in my Zenses that night. Just to help them along. So again, paying attention to nutrition, paying attention that you need to relax as much as possible. There's a very fine line between relaxing too much and walking too much. And you'll know at a certain point on Saturday, the fatigue will set in. But you really should think about shutting it down by 6 p.m. Michelle, you got anything to add to that?
Well, I think you make a good point about that half marathon. We haven't done the Goofy. We don't have plans. Maybe next year I'm going to try the Goofy after I do my marathon this year. But it's interesting to me because the people, our friends who do the Goofy over and over again, I think they look at the half as a very leisurely, have fun, stop and see the characters type of experience. And I agree that they really hold back, and I think that's a good idea. In terms of nutrition, it's something that I think you practice during your training, and you have to try as much as you can to keep your experience at Disney similar to what has worked for you for your training. What I mean by that is that although there are wonderful experiences at restaurants that you could have, try not to eat anything that's, try not to eat too much too soon to the race. Don't try any unusual types of foods. I think after the races are over, you can celebrate and do whatever you want. But before the races, you should try to stick to what's worked for you before. For me, I know for this past race, for the Wine and Dine, that meant that I actually went to the supermarket to get some of the things that I like to have before I run. For instance, for me, I know a lot of people don't like milk products before they run, but I really like to have a smoothie, and that really works well for me. So I got my Chobani yogurt and things like that, and I tried to keep that, the pre-race meal, similar to what I do during my training. So, but I know that we're going to talk about this some more, so stay tuned, Mitch.
Next question comes from Jason Blumenthal, who says, has anyone used the Jeff Galloway run-walk method for the Disney half marathon? How does this work with the crowds? Thanks.
Yes, we have.
Yes, we have. I actually, the first time I used it was this past January. I took a lot of pride in making sure I ran every step of all those half marathons in the past. But because of the plan to do the half marathon and the marathon relay, we both decided that we would train with the run walk run method because that would help us. So I've used it. Michelle has used it. How does this work with the crowds? There's a lot of opinions on how best to do this. But what you need to think about, Jason, is that if you're going to do this, you have to think about which side of the road you're going to run on, and you don't want to be in the middle. You want to be on the side. I would suggest being on the right, number one. Number two, when you're going to stop, if you're going if you're going to do 4 1s, 4 minutes running, 1 minute walking, just before you are about to go into your walk, you know, as Steve would say, put your head on a swivel and look around to see who's around you. Raise your hand, you know, that you're going to stop. That's pretty much what's being adopted by everybody. And then you're okay. But stay on the side, look around, let people know you're going to stop and you should be okay. Michelle?
Yeah, I used it for the wine and dine, Jason. And now, one thing that I want to point out right away is that when I started to do distance running, one of our good friends, Josh Gidlowski, who had done lots of different distance races, said that there's a myth that people run all of these races. A lot of people do run walk. So for me, that was a very liberating type of thing. And I think that Disney has made a very good choice in using Jeff Galloway as their mentor and their spokesperson, because the run walk, I think, is a good way to make sure that people are safe in terms of not overdoing it and ensuring that you can run for a long time. So there's nothing that says that you have to run the whole way, and it doesn't make you any better of a runner. You know, I think that's really important, number one. Number two is that, as I mentioned before, I just did the wine and dine. There were so many people doing run walk. So many people. So many people using their gym bosses or just, you know, deciding to walk at a certain point. I saw people stopping mostly on the right. Some people were stopping on the left. And what I did is I actually just put, when I heard the beeper go off, I just put my hand up and I'm kind of eased myself over to the side and started my walk then. And so it does, at the beginning, I would say the first 4 miles is kind of crowded. For me, I tried to stay on the right as much as possible. But so many people use it, Jason, that I think you're going to be fine. You're going to see that you are not alone. It's something that many, many people are doing, and especially with Jeff Galloway. I even saw Jeff Galloway during the Tower of Terror 10-miler using the Galloway method. You know, he practices what he preaches, and a lot of people are following suit. So you'll see it a lot.
I think he uses 2 1s or 1 1s. Anyways. The next question comes all the way from Hershey, Pennsylvania. It's from John Maloney, who says, this is a good question. Would you explain the timing of the start of the Disney World half marathon in a little more detail? For instance, how long does it take to wait for the bus at a resort hotel, for the bus to get to the drop-off at Epcot, to walk from the drop-off area to the starting line, and for each subsequent corral to cross the starting line after the start? Also, is there somewhere to see how expected running paces match up with the corral letters to have an idea of corral placement? I'm really enjoying listening to the podcast and am looking forward to my first Disney running event in January. You have a lot of questions, Michelle.
I think a lot of people would have those same questions.
First one, I'll let you start. How long does it take to wait for the bus at the resort hotel and for the bus to get to the drop-off at Epcot?
Mike, what do you think? Should we use Wine and Dine as our example since it's the most recent race?
I think that one of the things, since this is the January event, I think we want to talk about what would be expected for the big weekend in January, because there are more people running and it's during the morning. It's not during the night.
Sure.
So, and it's a different start, different venue. So go ahead.
So the race usually starts around 6 o'clock, 6:30, and the buses start picking people up at about 3 a.m. And you can take your car over there at 3 a.m. So you can start at 3, trying to get a bus over there with the idea that you'll get there at about 3:30 or so. If sometimes it takes a little bit longer. Last year, people had a little bit harder time getting over there. But you'll have about a 2-hour wait before the race actually starts. So you should plan ahead for that. 2 hours in January in Florida can be cold, even though it's Florida. So some things that people do, we've talked about this before, are they bring layers of clothes that they know that they're going to discard. They may bring a big trash bag to wear, you know, just punch a hole for your head and your arms to wear to keep you warm. Some people do runner's retreat. So you have you have a long time before you actually start to run the race. But before 6 o'clock, they start to there's a DJ there, and they start to walk people to the corrals. They encourage people to go to the corrals. So what time would you say, Mike, that they start walking people to the corrals? It's probably an hour before the race starts. They start
I would say right around 5 o'clock is when we hear the call for the corrals. Yes.
Yeah. And you have to remember that the walk to the corrals is about, I don't know, it seems like a mile to me.
Mile and a quarter.
Is it really? It's a mile and a quarter. So you have it's kind of nice because you're warming up, but people are walking, the people aren't scrambling. They're walking at a leisurely pace. When you're talking about 25,000 people, it's a good idea to get them moving an hour before. So once you're in the corrals, you might have about 45-minute wait before the race actually starts. And so one of the strategies that I use is I try to move up. I call it my Boston subway walk. I walk the way I do through the subway system when I'm waiting to catch a train in Boston, kind of meander my way up through to as far as I can get to the front of the corral. Now, for most of that time, you're going to be standing up. Sometimes people do sit down. I know for the wine and dine, a lot of people were sitting down. It was warm enough to do that. But you're going to keep your layers on then, and you're going to wait for the race start. So, Mike, do you want to talk about what happens at that point?
At the point of when the race starts? Well, the corrals are broken down. And they try to break down the corrals as evenly as possible so that there's about the same number of runners in each corral. And as each corral is released, the corral behind it then walks up to the start. And usually it's about a 2 to a 3 minute buffer in between the corral's release.
And actually, it's actually 5 minutes. So
is it five?
Mm-hmm, yeah, because we just did it for the wine and dine.
So wine and dine, was it five?
Yeah, they let people off. So they say corral A, you start, and then there are fireworks for every corral, which I think is nice. They let the A people off, and then that takes about 2 minutes for people to get going, and then you have about 3 minutes for the whole corral B to move up, and then corral C moves up, and so it's about 5 minute difference.
So as to answer your question, John, you can say about 5 minutes for each subsequent corral to cross the starting line after the start. Now, as far as expected running paces, it varies from race to race depending upon the field, depending upon how many people are running and what the breakdown is of paces. So you may have 1 year, you may have a lot of people who are fast. So Corral G may be faster than it was the previous year when there were a lot of not so fast runners. So it's very hard to get an idea regarding what your corral will have as far as the average pace for the runners. I'm looking to see if there's anything else that...
I think this is a really great question because I think a lot of people have this question too.
I want to add one thing to this that a lot of people have talked about. A lot of people stay at Old Key West or Saratoga Springs or Port Orleans and think about walking to the start. There is no sidewalk. Reedy Creek emergency crews do not like you to do that, and I would not recommend it because there will be some day where the runners may be stopped and they'll be asked to go back to the resort and get a bus, and who knows how long it will take to get to the start. So just a word to the wise, I would not do that. All right, let's keep going to Beth Anderson, who hails from Clinton Township in Michigan, I guess. And she says, "Hi, Mike and Michelle. I really love the podcast. Thanks for taking the time and effort to put it together. I wanted to add something to your response to a recent listener question. A listener asked if she should bring her own fuel for a Run Disney race. Michelle mentioned that Run Disney takes good care of their runners, and I would agree, with one exception. I've done 6 races at Walt Disney World and Disneyland, and at 2 of those races, they had run out of cliff shots by the time we got to mile 9. I am by no means the fastest runner out there, but we weren't in the very back either. There was no reason they should have run out of fuel. I did let Run Disney know that this occurred, and hopefully it will not happen again. but I definitely would recommend bringing your own fuel. My question is this: which Run Disney event, either past or present, have you enjoyed the most? Michelle, you go first.
First of all, Beth, that's a great point. I was actually thinking of this question in terms of, I want to mention again, the Wine and Dine, because I brought my own cliff shots, and you're absolutely right. I take two of them before I get to mile nine, when you get another one. So I've never had the experience of them running out, but you really should be taking a few before you get to mile nine. So it is a good idea to bring your own fuel. I'm going to choose my top three. It's hard for me to choose one. I think in no particular order would be my first half marathon that I did. I didn't have any friends running down there. I was all by myself. But boy, did I feel a sense of pride when I crossed that finish line. And I was in tears. I was running for a charity in my mom's name. And I just felt such – I never thought I could run a half marathon. I think there are a lot of people out there listening to this feel the same way. So that was wonderful. A second favorite was when Mike and I did the Chip and Dale marathon relay last year. I really, really enjoyed that experience of waiting for him and accomplishing that together when we both got our medals. At separate times, but we both got our medals. That was really fun. But my third one actually was the Disneyland half marathon. I really, really enjoyed running through Disneyland and running through Angel Stadium. And so I think those are my three favorites. I know she asked for one, but I'm very much looking forward to my first marathon too. And I think that I have a strong sense that I will be able to finish that safely. And I think I'm going to feel that same sense of achievement and pride too. What about you, Mike?
Well, if you're going to pick three, then I'm going to pick three. In no particular order. Number one, the 2005 Race for the Cure, Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure, took place in Animal Kingdom, and I really did not plan to run that race. I just happened to go down for the Race for the Taste that year, which was a 10K, and now it's called Wine and Dine Half Marathon. And when I was picking up my race packet for the Race for the Taste, which was going to take place on a Saturday, there was Susan G. Komen people signing up people for a race on that Friday, and I thought, why not? It was $25. I ran in that race, and the most amazing race I ever had run in, because I was introduced to the breast cancer awareness effort and the Sea of Pink. It was just an amazing, amazing race, and I'll never forget that. The following year, I was very active in raising money, and I finished second to the race director in raising funds. I was just very, very motivated by it. It really, really made an impression upon me to this very day. So that's one. The second one is, that's a good one. Actually, I'm going to go with just two. The second one, Michelle, would be I ran in the very first Princess Half Marathon. And I enjoyed that because, number one, there were only 13 or 14,000 running. Number two, it was late February and it was just perfect weather. And number three, I think I did a PR on that race, and it was just a race where I had I don't know how to put it. I had no stress or anything. It just ran. If you remember that, Michelle, I think that was the one that I had hurt my back a few weeks before, and I wasn't sure if I was going to run. But I just think that the ones that really stand out for me are the ones where, you know, I just had fun and I didn't feel any stress of trying to finish at a certain time. It was just very, very, very enjoyable. One more thing on the cliff shots, the volunteers sometimes are put in a very, very funny, awkward position when a runner says, "Could I have two?" And they give them two. And I think that's what happened when the cliff shots ran out. Sometimes the volunteers who are trained very well and who are trained weeks in advance, sometimes they feel bad. They see someone struggling. Here, have two. So hopefully that they'll have enough next time.
But I think people should be able to ask for two if they want to.
Sure. But to your point though, Michelle, you should always prepare so that you know, so that you don't depend upon Disney, depend upon yourself. So I think that what you do is a good idea. Always taking few more than you need. We have one last question.
We've got a long show.
Yes,
do we have time for one more?
The last one. Her question comes from Christine Souza, who says, "Hi there. A friend of mine just turned me on to your podcast last week. I am up to episode 6 so far. I love your insights on preparation and expectations. I just did the Tower of Terror race with my sister, and now we are signed up for the Princess Half with another friend. I was wondering what your thoughts are on the photo ops through the race. Do you guys stop? I made one stop during the Tower of Terror race just so I had photographic evidence of the race. What recommendations can you make for people who are training and want to make stops along the route? Should we be training in a different way? Perhaps a faster pace? Thanks." Michelle, you're the one that loves to do this, especially on 5K, so yeah. I'll let you start.
So I guess I should say, Christine, that when I'm doing a half marathon, I don't want to stop. I want to keep on going. So that's, for me personally, that's not a race that I stop. We have a lot of running friends who do stop and stop for a lot of the photo ops. I don't. If you do stop, I did for the Tower of Terror 10 miler. I was running with two other people and it was fantastic. And I would say that the lines go very, very quickly. And I did run with my phone for that one, and the cast members who were there are very tech savvy. They'll use a camera. They'll use your iPhone. They took lots and lots of pictures. For me, the time that I plan for photo ops is those 5Ks. And if you listen to our 5K show, you'll know that it took me an hour with my bunch of friends to do the 5K. And that's because we stopped for everything. We stopped for every single photo opportunity. Just personally, I just kind of am in a zone where I really want to focus on running. I know people who do the Goofy who use that half marathon as their photo op time. I think that one of the things to remember is that my philosophy is that none of us are competing for the Olympics. We just want to finish and finish safely. So I think if you do stop for photos, that's fine. I wouldn't necessarily train in a different way, run a faster pace. I think unless you're running very much more than a 16-minute mile, you're going to be fine with the photo ops. Even if you see 30 people online, the pictures go very, very quickly. I would say 20 to 30 seconds per picture, and people are out of there. So you should be okay. What do you think, Mike?
I'll add my 2 cents. I don't stop for photo ops. I'm there to run. I'm not there to take photos with the characters. That's just my personal thing. Of course, you will see some very good photo opportunities. And one thing I want to mention to Christine is that I talked about earlier that one of my favorite races was the Princess Half that I ran about 2 or 3 years ago. I want to add, and for anyone else who's listening who's about to do the Princess Half in February for the first time, which I am registered for. Michelle, are you registered for that too?
I am.
Yes, you are. You will see more characters and better theming in that race than any other race. I wanted to add that. When I did it, it was just very, very, very much fun to see all the characters. And if you're a princess and you're running that weekend, you may very well want to stop for some of the photo opportunities, because there are many princes that are out there ready to take a photo with you. There are many opportunities, and the Princess Half Marathon is a lot of fun when it comes to that. I just feel that I want to do the best job I can for a half marathon, and I don't want to wait in line. And I've seen as many as 30 or 40 people in line, and if each one takes a minute to get their photo taken, that's 40 minutes, and I don't have an extra 40 minutes.
Yeah, it doesn't take a minute. I mean, people move very, very quickly, and everybody knows that they're there to move quickly. I do have to say that for the races that I have stopped, those are some of my favorite pictures. When I did the Tower of Terror 10 miler, I was with my friends Christine and Holly. We stopped for one of the things we stopped for was the Gravediggers from the Haunted Mansion. Love that picture. For the Mickey's Jingle Jungle 5K, there was a Christmas Donald Duck, and I love that picture. That's actually on my Facebook page. That's my profile picture. So you just have to decide what's best for you. You know, everybody's in a different mindset. I think for me, it took me so long to figure out that I could do a half marathon that I'm kind of like not in the mindset of stopping, but running with friends, it's always fun to take those pictures with friends too. Okay. So, Mike, we're going to give away some socks. We've had so many questions. We've had 9 questions.
And we usually do between 3 and 4 questions a show. So I'm going to suggest that we give away 2 pairs of socks.
Well, Steven isn't here, so we can volunteer him to give 2 pairs of socks away.
Okay, so 2 of these questions that have been sent in will be the people who wrote the questions will be the recipients of these socks. How are we going to do this?
So what I've done is I've taken everybody who has submitted a question and I've randomly put a number next to their name. And so if you choose 2 numbers, I will tell you who won the socks.
Well, for reasons only beknownst to you, I'm going to pick the numbers 4 and 8.
Okay. 4 and 8. So our winners are... Let's see. My drum roll didn't go, so I'm going to do it again. There we go. 4 is Lara, and 8 is Christine Souza. So Lara... What's Lara's last name?
Palazzetti.
Okay, yeah. Lara and Christine, if you email us and tell us your address, you will get some Sock Geek socks. Okay? Yay!
And congratulations to Lara and, was it Christine?
Christine.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank everybody for sending in their questions. We hope that we answered your questions as best as we could so that they took care of any issues that you had, or hopefully it will help you in your training. We want to thank you again, and we want everybody else out there who is thinking about sending a question in, please feel free to do so. We want you to send it to questions@mickeymousepodcast.com. You can also post it on our Facebook page, the Mickey Mouse Podcast on Facebook. And remember, the question that you ask may be a question that someone else could benefit from.
These are great questions this week, by the way. Yeah, really nice.
So the conversation will continue on Facebook. Once again, this is Mike Scopa on behalf of Michelle Scribner-McLean saying we'll see you on the road.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com, and we'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.